Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a technology presentation from April 2018. Dr. Jan Behringer, scientific expert, life science and care, Hohenstein Group presents Cooling Fabrics, tested, approved, working.
Good morning, everybody. Warm welcome from my side to the first session this morning at the Performance Day Forum. My name is Jan Behringer, Hohenstein Institute. I'm head of the industrial projects and special projects in our institute. And I'm happy to give you a presentation today about cooling fabrics. The title is Tested, Approved, Working. Of course, it's also about testing, but I would like to give you a deep insight into human thermoregulation and actually what cooling for human thermoregulation means. I will have an Q&A session at the very end. If you have very urgent questions that are kind of burning in you, just feel free to shoot out. We can also make a short break and answer that very urgent question during the presentation. So I first of all would like to give a short introduction about Hohenstein for those of you who are not familiar with us. Then looking at the human thermoregulation and clothing physiology, introducing our Watson device, which I think is already quite well known in the industry, present some results from the Watson testing on evaporative cooling. We also can quantify kind of heating with our device and give a summary and outlook and maybe also a higher perspective, if we have time at the end, what clothing physiology will be next, kind of clothing physiology 2.0. So Hohenstein is a 100% private company. We are located roughly around 250 kilometers straight from Munich, northern area of Stuttgart. I usually say in the automotive triangle of Baden-Württemberg between Porsche, Mercedes-Benz and Audi, in a wonderful wine region. And we also have a nice castle from the 17th century is our main building, which might also be the explanation why Hohenstein testing is usually a little bit more expensive than from our competitors. As you can see, here's the aerial view, right in the very green scenery. Hohenstein is family business in third generation. So the grandfather founded our institute in 1946, and currently the grandson is our CEO. We have an independent institute for testing, certification, and inspections. This is, to be honest, the institute where the main money comes into the company. We have a non-profit research institute for public-funded projects and also special projects for the industry. And we have an academy for training, seminars, and education. So Hohenstein has grown a lot over the last years. So when I started in Hohenstein about 15 years ago, we were 180 people. We are now 1,000 worldwide and more than 600 at the headquarters in Bönigheim in Germany. As you can see, we are located all over the planet, especially where textile business is taking place. But we are also able to serve the major brands in their headquarters, for example, in the United States, where also currently the most clothing physiology projects are taking place. So we come from R&D. So this is actually why Hohenstein was founded in 1946 as an R&D institute. Then step by step, we developed the testing and certification and the information consulting and training. Those little gears between the three different sections indicate that all these are very closely connected. So findings that we get out of R&D are transferred into testing and certification, or something that we learn from testing, maybe a general problem in the industry with either testing method or material can be transferred back to R&D to solve that kind of problem. Of course, we need to talk about all this. We need to have some marketing as we are not getting funded by the German government. We need to earn our money, so we need to talk actually what we're doing. So these are our core competences. Today will be mainly about clothing physiology. But we also do clothing technology, which is cut and sew, pattern making, and 3D scanning. By the way, there will be a nice webinar next Wednesday about our services in clothing technology. All around textile finishing, textile UV protection, certification of toys, textile reprocessing, either in the industrial scale, but also in the household scale. spectroscopy, all around biology and the textile, hygiene, environment and medicine, personal protective equipment, and compression garments for medical and also for sports application. So it's actually my favorite slide. So we have the human being, and what Hohenstein can provide is services all around the human being. So we are at the very end of the textile chain. We have very little knowledge about yarn making, fabric making. We start with textile finishing, cut and sew, and of course all the performance of the ready-made garment. So we have the wear comfort, clothing physiology, we have the sizes and the fit, which is clothing technology, we have the reprocessing, the washing, the protection, which is PPE, and all around textile finishing and interaction with the electromagnetic spectrum. So today I'm going to talk about clothing physiology and cooling. So this is actually our core competence we have since the 1950s. This is actually what the Hohenstein Institute of Textile Innovation was founded in the 50s. So we have more than now 60 years of experience with the human thermoregulation and all around clothing physiology, garment and textiles. So in numbers, about 150 R&D projects, either funded from the German government, but also funded from the industry directly. So human thermoregulation. A lot of humans are sitting here, and they all function with the same principle. We are all mammals, no reptiles, so we have a steady body core temperature. And this is how human beings work. And the body core temperature needs to be steady. To mention, I talk about body core temperature, not skin temperature. Forget the skin temperature, what matters is the body core temperature. And the computer system that is regulating our body core temperature is a little red dot inside our skull, in the stem brain, which is called the hypothalamus. So this little part, it's a very ancient part of our brain, is the thermoregulatory center of human beings. So like a computer, it processes the input and induces outputs. So the input is, of course, also skin temperature, but mainly it's the body core temperature. And this go into the hypothalamus, and if this is too high or too low, certain actions are generated inside the human body. So when we are feeling too cold, we get to shiver to generate energy, and if we get too hot, we start to sweat. And this is our own inbuilt air condition, basically. So to point this out a little bit more detail, in the middle, comfortable, all okay. So the body core temperature is a little bit below 100 Fahrenheit, because Mr. Fahrenheit actually had fever when he set the Fahrenheit scale. So 100 Fahrenheit is supposed to be the body core temperature, but as said, he had a little bit fever, so it's a little bit below 100 Fahrenheit. In Celsius, in metric units, it's 36.9 or so, a little bit below 37 degrees Celsius. So, and well, when we are getting too warm, basically due to the ambient temperatures or due to exercises, our body needs cooling because we generate too much energy. And therefore, the blood is at the very first stage pumped into the extremities to increase the surface area of the radiative heat loss, for example. You can see this at cold temperatures. The blood is mainly pumped into the core. So this is realized usually by cold hands and cold feet. And at warmer temperatures, we use the maximum available surface area, which is called vascular dilatation. If this is no longer sufficient to get us enough cooling, we start our own inbuilt air condition, which is the evaporation of sweat. And this is actually the only thing that the human body has at hand to cool himself down. We have nothing more at hand. It's sweat evaporation. This is our air condition. If this is no longer sufficient, the body core temperature is still rising. And you know, at a certain level, we have a dead end, and this basically means death. So we die when we have too high body core temperature. Actually, this is the main death indication for firefighters. Most of the firefighters die because of heat stroke, not because of fire. So in the other direction, it's basically the same. So we lose too much heat, so the body is contracting the blood into the core. We have falling temperature on feet and hands. This is actually the first indication that we are getting too cold. You get cold hands, you get cold feet. If that is no longer sufficient, our body wants to create energy, heat. And this is usually done by muscle contraction, cold shivering, so we start to shiver. And again, if this process is not enough to maintain enough heat, we lose more and more heat, the body core temperature is falling, and again, this is a dead end, so also we die when the body core temperature is too low. So you see, as human beings, we have a very limited range in body core temperature where we can exist. This is how we are built, this is how physics works, this is how physiology works, and this is basically the rules that we have to follow. These are the rules. A little bit detailed, the interaction between body, climate, and clothing. This is actually what clothing physiology is all about. So at first, we need to take a look at our so-called metabolic rate. This is the energy that the human body is producing when we are alive. When we are dead, of course not, but when we are alive, we produce energy. So this energy can vary between 80 watts. This is when we are sleeping. So when we are all asleep, we still light up like an 80-watt light bulb. This is the energy that we produce. And for very high sports activities, I will show some higher numbers later on, this can be up to 1,000 watts. So for today, we leave out the skin contact and the ergonomics. This would be a whole separate presentation. And this is our internal power plant. So this power plant creates the energy that we need to exist, and this produces heat, so roughly around 37 degrees Celsius. This heat has to be dissipated through the clothing system to maintain a steady temperature. We have radiation available, which is a dry heat transfer, and also convection and conduction. I will come to those processes in the next slide a little bit more detailed. Then we have the sweat transport, which is moisture transport, ventilation, buffering, and basically, when we have heat or cold stress, this results in an impairment of performance. So when we are too cold or too hot, we do not work properly anymore. You may have realized this already. A few metabolic rates, just in the table. As mentioned before, sleeping about 80 watts. When we go to medium physical action, just walking, it's already roughly 300 watts that the human body is producing. So this energy, we need to get rid of it. Heavy physical action, well, 500 watts, we have cross-country skiing, 700 watts, high-performance spots for trained athletes, it's 800 watts, and the temporary peak performance that a human being can generate is something between 1,000 and 1,200 watts. Usain Bolt might be able to generate 1,500 watts when he runs the 100 meters in less than 10 seconds. So, but these are very, well, these are high-performance athletes, these are in normal terms, usually not regular human beings, in terms of clothing physiology. Well, the air condition that we have built in, we have sweat amount to evaporate, so when we do only short exercise, it's very limited, but already when we go to a soccer game, it's already about 3 liters that the soccer players produce during a 90 minutes game. When we go a marathon, we have nearly 5 liters, and if you look at the triathlon, the Ironman in Hawaii, well, those guys and girls, they usually sweat about 20 liters during the whole day. So, and all this sweat is evaporated to give the body cooling. Well, this is actually one of my favorite slides because it actually has a very high density of information, and this is also a key slide how different processes in cooling regarding the environmental temperature works. So, as mentioned before, when we are comfortable, we need to have a balance between the heat gain and the heat loss. Then we are feeling good, the body core temperature is constant, and, well, we are performing quite good. And also, together with the clothing system, it's always the aim to have a balance between the heat loss and the heat gain. The heat gain on one side, we have two factors that are bringing energy into the human body as thermoregulatory system, which is the metabolic heat, so how we exercise, how hard we exercise, and of course, in which environmental conditions we exercise. Is it cold outside? Is it warm outside? Is it humid? Is it dry? This is the part of the heat gain. Well, to get rid of the excess heat, we have actually five processes in terms of physics available. I left out the fifth one. Why? I will tell you right afterwards. And we have conduction. So basically, you have a warm surface and touch a cold surface. So when I touch the surface here with my hand, the heat is flowing into that desk. So this is conduction. We have convection. This is usually used by radiative heaters. So warm air ascends to the top because it's lighter and drags cold air from the bottom. So we have kind of a circulation zone around us at the moment, with my person a little bit more than you sitting. And this is also a part of the cooling, the convection. Then we have the evaporation, which is the evaporation of sweat. And we have the radiation, which is just by radiation, so irradiating to the ambience. I left out the respiration, so the breathing. This is also one part of the heat loss, but this only comes into play at very low sub-zero temperatures. So around minus 10, minus 20 Celsius, we have a very high impact of the radiative heat loss. But usually not at normal temperatures. And the tricky thing is that those processes, they depend on the ambient temperature, because it always works with the physical principle of diffusion. So from a high concentration to a low concentration. And when we talk about temperature-dependent processes, of course, the lower the ambient temperature is, this is also what is displayed here, the more the radiation comes into play and the more the convection comes into play. The higher the temperature is, especially in the range of the body core temperature, those processes, they are totally irrelevant. They do not count anymore. So for lower temperatures, look at the radiation, look at the convection. For higher temperatures around the body core temperature, so at very warm summer days and higher and very hot days, the only process that is left to cool a human being down is the evaporation of sweat. And this is why it's so important to look at the application scenario of the textile and also the ambient temperature. So a textile that works on radiative heat loss doesn't work at higher temperature anymore, because we have no more gradient to the ambience. All right, now going a little bit deeper into it. We have learned that the evaporation of sweat is the only way that is left to get rid of the excess heat at higher temperatures, and it's also the most effective way to get rid of excess heat. So these are the basic physics principles of cooling, and in brackets, evaporative cooling, but this is actually what counts for the human body. And mentioned before, it's all about liquid sweat, respectively water. So the sweat is consisting about 98% of water, so forget all the salts and amino acids. This is what is working, is the water in the sweat. The amino acids don't work, the salts don't work for evaporation. For evaporative cooling, we have a three-step process. And it's always three steps, not only one. Usually it's said absorption or wicking is cooling. Well, it's only a third part of the story. It's not the full story. Of course, the sweat needs to go into the textile, that the textile can process the sweat to better evaporate. The second one is lateral moisture transport. So imagine if you just sweat under the armpits and the sweat is distributed over your chest and over your back, you have a higher surface area that is available for evaporation. And last but not least, it's evaporation. Evaporation is generating the cooling at temperatures that are higher than the body core temperature, and only evaporation. So if we have no evaporation or very limited evaporation, cooling doesn't happen or happen so effectively. As mentioned before, evaporation is the only thing that drags heat out of the body efficiently, and this is the number in physics. At skin temperature, so something around 32, 33, 34 Celsius, it's 2.4 kilojoules per gram of sweat. This is a huge amount of energy. So, for example, if we would sweat alcohol, maybe drank too much last night, this number would be higher, but usually human beings are sweating water. And this is also an important factor. The garment that provides the cooling needs to have direct contact with the skin, so no air gap in between. So the water is evaporating in the textile, and the cold is generated in the textile. So the cold basically must flow back over the skin into the human body to get rid of the excess energy. So it's not compression, it's just a tight fit that we have direct contact from the cooling textile with the skin. So you see, it's also a matter of pattern making and fit of the garment. And repeat it, wicking is not cooling. Wicking is a part of cooling, but wicking doesn't mean cooling necessarily. All right, this is a slide for certain varieties of cooling. So I just pointed out what is out there and what is perceived by the human being. So we have here different varieties of cooling, which is currently used in the market. And this is the sensation that the body is generating, and these are the test devices. Of course, you see our test device a little bit more than other ones. It's tactics, but also physics. So going into this, physiological cooling. This is what I just presented to really draw excess heat energy out of the human body, and this is by the evaporation of water, so the evaporative cooling. Human person is sensing a cool thermal sensation, and as long as the textile is wet or supplied by external water or by sweat, we feel an unlimited thermal cool sensation. Physiological heat loss, yes, this is achieved by this kind of cooling, by the evaporation. Suitable for high metabolic activities, also at higher temperatures, yes, of course, this works, and Watson can do this actually perfectly. We have sensorial cooling, and this is basically by triggering the cold receptors in the human skin with a chemical reaction. Usually it's a biochemical reaction. You perceive a cool thermal sensation, but usually only for minutes, because at a certain point, those receptors get kind of used to it. Well, it's cold, okay, switch off. We have no physiological heat loss because you are not sweating, usually. This is not suitable for high metabolic activities, and the test device which is currently available is only the human skin, so there is no test device available for sensorial cooling. What is also a lot out there is so-called cool touch textiles, so textiles that generate a cold perception when you touch it. So we have a cool thermal sensation, yes, usually it's a few seconds. If you use, for example, latent heat storage, it can be extended up to a few minutes, depending on the amount. And of course, we do have a physiological heat loss, but this is very limited. As mentioned before, when I touch a cold surface, of course, some of this energy flows into the table, for example. But it's nothing compared with sweating. It's not suitable for high metabolic activities because the energy that is lost by this process is just too low. And the device that was actually built for the cool touch is the QMAX testing, but of course Watson can supply that also. All right, so now that was the physics and the human thermoregulation, now going into the data. The reason why we constructed Watson is that there was actually no device out there to really quantify the claims of cooling, especially evaporative cooling, and there were no objective measurement data. So this is why we generated this device. Thermophysiological properties you can also measure on the sweating guarded hot plate, for example, but this is kind of a steady state measurement. It's a static measurement, and Watson is a dynamic measurement. So it's actually not suitable for measuring cooling effects on fabrics. It's the basic thermophysiological parameters, but not cooling. You can use sweating mannequins. This works for the evaporative heat loss, but the thing is that you usually need a full garment, and the fit needs to be correct to measure it correctly. As soon as you have a t-shirt on the sweating mannequin that is not fitting properly, when you do a repetition, you have a different fit and therefore also different data. So I would not recommend doing cooling testing on sweating mannequins, especially at labs that actually do not know what they are doing. Finally, of course, we can use human subjects as the very last testing device. This is usually the most preferred option because you get direct feedback from the human being. You have the data from the human thermoregulation. But the issue is that, it's a subjective evaluation. You need to validate your human subjects. And it's a lot of time and effort. So this is usually a testing in Hohenstein, which is the most expensive one. Usually nobody does that. So we do this in our R&D projects to do the correlation between our measured thermophysiological data on our devices. There needs to be a correlation with the human being. So for R&D, this is mandatory. All right, so Watson, actually it's an abbreviation of German Wärmeabgabetester. So Wärmeabgabe means heat loss, and the SON was simply added to make it sound a little bit more cooler. By the way, our sweating mannequin is called Sherlock, and we have Watson and Sherlock investigating for thermal comfort. It's kind of a marketing story. All right, so it's a very versatile thermal testing device for special conditions, and it's also a dynamic device, not a steady state. The key element is a measurement head with a very fast response time to the temperatures. And the whole electronics, is to simulate thermoregulation of the human skin. Various climates can be set, numerous edge conditions can be set. It's actually an all-open system. But there's already a kind of an established testing protocol, which most of our clients have already used to be kind of comparable. The data that we get is actually the cooling power in area per area of the textile in watts. That's the same physical unit as the human metabolic rating. So you see exactly how much cooling power a textile generates when a person is sweating. Additionally, we can have temperatures under and above the sample in a certain distance. As mentioned, it's an open system. So there's a lot of opportunities to get additional data. It's based on our 60 years work on the Hohenstein sweating guarded hot plate, but it's a separate development. So it's not a new sweating guarded hot plate. It's actually an addition, because this was something that was actually missing in the sweating guarded hot plates, the evaporative heat loss, to quantify it. So this is how it looks like. We do have the heated plate, which is set to skin temperature, and this temperature is maintained. So of course, the heating is switched on when you put something cold on the plate, and the heating does not work anymore when you put something warm on the plate. And the amount of energy by the heating that goes into the plate is exactly the amount of energy that is lost by evaporation in a textile on the plate. We have water supply to the plate to mimic liquid sweating. Textile sample can be placed in direct contact, but also with a certain distance over the plate. We have wind perpendicular and sun radiation simulating doing sports activities outdoors at higher temperatures, sun radiation, and also the wind speed mimicking the walking. The whole setup is placed in the climatic chamber. This is actually the crucial part of all clothing physiology measurements. They need to be done, or they must be done, in controlled environmental conditions. All right, some results. So this is actually the main testing protocol that is used for the Watson device. It's our so-called apparel protocol. On the y-axis, we have the heating power that goes into the plate to maintain that set temperature. And on the x-axis, we have, of course, the time code from the experiment. The experiment is set up that way that we are mimicking an exercise activity. So first starting exercising, then starting to sweat, stop exercising, stopping to sweat, and kind of chill out. So in the first 10 minutes, this is our dry phase. So Watson is not sweating in the first 10 minutes, which gives us an information about the dry thermal insulation of the textile. And also the cool touch effect would be noticeable here in the very first seconds or minutes. For measuring the dry thermal insulation, I would recommend the sweating guarded hot plate, because this is just a kind of a qualitative assessment. Well, now it gets interesting. At minute number 10, we switch on the sweating, and at a defined rate, representative for high metabolic sports activities. And you see the water is going into the fabric, and the water starts to evaporate. And the fabric gets colder, and as we have direct contact to the plate, also the plate gets colder. And the heating senses that and puts heating energy into the plate. This is why the heating energy of Watson is rising. And as mentioned before, the heating power of Watson is exactly the cooling power of the fabric, the evaporative cooling power of the fabric. In this part, you can learn something about the responsivity of the fabric to sweating. In this part, you can see how different components of the fabric are working or building up. And this part is usually our steady state evaporative heat loss. So this is actually the value between 60 and 70 minutes that we take for the assessment of the cooling power of a fabric. This is the average value. So we have stopped the sporting activities at minute number 70, which means that sweating is stopping. And now a sports fabric should dry out as fast as possible. So the evaporative heat loss should be going down as fast as possible. You can see that with this fabric here. The sweat is still evaporating, but it's evaporating very fast. So we already have, after roughly 10 minutes, the same heating power as in the very beginning. So the experiment gives you information about the dry thermal insulation, the response to sweating, the evaporative heat loss in Watson, also the dry out time and the dry behavior of the fabric. Actually, a lot of data that you get out of one measurement. Come on, next one. All right. This is an example of cooling fabrics that are out there, all labeled with cooling. As you can see, the red one is kind of performing really well. Very low dry thermal insulation, a quick response to sweating, and achieving very quickly the highest evaporative heat loss. Some fabrics in between. And the purple one is actually very lazy, a very high thermal dry insulation, takes up the sweat very slowly, and also doesn't generate a very high evaporative heat loss at the steady state in the sweating phase. And it also takes quite a long time to dry out. And this is how you can kind of level out your fabrics. So a lot of people have been asking in the past, and this is now the data that we have supplied, well, what about naked human skin? This should be the most effective one. Here's the data. As you can see, we did a Watson experiment with the plate not covered, so basically a naked human skin simulating. And you see that the cooling power that is achieved is roughly 4.5 watts. If we go back to that slide, well, this one actually works worse than the naked human skin. This one works almost equal, but these ones work much more better. And this is proof that fabrics are able, or actually are the right tool, to foster or to improve the evaporative heat loss of our human skin. As you can also see, we have extended the testing time far longer, and you see also the naked plate needs quite long for evaporation. This little dent in here is giving a direct feedback, so of course first there start drops to generate on the plate. And the more water you get, those drops kind of fall into each other. And this was actually the time where a lot of drops fell into a larger lake on the plate. And this is also why the heating power went down at the very beginning. Also, as you can see, that the drying time is actually very long. All right, this was the cooling. Basically, the same can be done with the heating. So as soon as you put energy into the testing system, the heating power from the plate goes down. And we did this for a winter finish for fabrics, so kind of the opposite of a cold black, basically a warm white, which is harvesting additional energy from the sunlight to keep people warm at winter sports activities, for example. All right, and this is only the steady state of the measurement. This is showing again the heating power of Watson. We have the dark columns are always the fabric without that finish, and the light color columns are the fabrics with the finish. So unfinished, we have a heating power of roughly 4.8 watts. And as mentioned before, this fabric is taking up energy, therefore the heating power goes down, or the plate is warmer, and the heating power goes down. This is the proof here, and the same here also. The lower the heating power of the plate, the higher the temperature of the fabric. That's an additional feature. You can also plot the temperatures between the measuring head and the fabric, so basically giving you the temperature or the microclimate between the human skin and the fabric. And as you can see, those fabric sample number one without the finish and sample number two with the finish, there's a temperature difference under the fabric, so in between the fabric and the skin, of roughly 4 degrees Celsius. This is also something what can be measured. All right, summarizing up a little bit, well, we can prove how cooling works. We can put a number on it, and we can do comparisons between different fabrics. The results that you get are actually these curves that I have presented, so you get a very deep insight into how your sample really works. And of course, you get also some numbers out of the graphs, but in a Watson report, the main thing is this graph, and this gives you a lot of information. Of course, you need to have some technical people in your team that understand these kind of curves, but it's actually very easy and straightforward. We need only 10 by 10 inch samples in metric units, 25 by 25 centimeters. This is all we need, so no full garment, just the fabric. You can do all the development on the fabric stage, and if the fabric works perfect, you can go the next step to the shirt, for example. It's highly versatile and adjustable to most questions. We have a dynamic scenario, as you have seen, so actually how the fabric performs during a sports activity. And if you're looking for modified protocols, this is something we can help you with, no problem. But usually I would recommend to stick to the already established ones that you have comparative data with your competitors. All kinds of thermal effects like cooling, heating can be quantified. Currently, we recommend to send in also a benchmark that you see if your new development is better working or if your efforts have been, try it again. So we had a lot of requests for this testing. This is why we set up a second device, and it's working since the beginning of last year. It took us almost 1 year to set it up. The key issue is that this device is very sensitive. So, of course, you need first to get the second device working as the first device, and then you need to find the right spot in the climate chamber where all the air movements are identical to the first device. And this took quite a long time. What is currently in progress? This is what clothing physiology is all about, to correlate, excuse me, to correlate the data that we get from our measurement systems with the human thermoregulation. So what is the impact of a certain amount of cooling power of a fabric on the physiological part of the human being? So this project will be finished by end of this year. So I'm pretty confident that we will be able to tell at 30 degrees Celsius outside, at running 9 kilometers per hour with a metabolic rate of 500 watts, you need a t-shirt with, 5 watts of cooling power to maintain the body core temperature. This will be the outcome of the R&D project. What is also currently in process, a lot of our clients have asked for standardization of this method. Well, we hear our clients, so we go for standardization for the Watson measurement, and this is currently done under a very new and smart program of the German DIN. It's called DIN Spec, and this Watson standard will be available in English by the end of the year. So there will also be a standard that you can reference in your deliverables. All right. As we have still some amount of time, I'd like to show you something about what Hohenstein is currently doing, which we call Clothing Physiology 2.0. So do you know where this picture was taken? International Space Station. Hohenstein is going to the International Space Station. So not me, but textiles go to the International Space Station. Well, I think I wouldn't get any approval from my wife, so which is stay here on Earth and do all the data. Well, International Space Station. So actually, we performed already an R&D project on the ISS in 2015. By that time, the German astronaut Alexander Gerst, this is this guy here on the right side, was his first time up to the space station, and we were very lucky, and I'm very grateful that this has worked out. We were invited to do a kind of demonstration project for fabrics on the International Space Station. Our team was consisting, of course, of the German Aerospace Center, the European Space Agency, and the team was Professor Gunga from Charité. He's very experienced in space medicine. We had support by that time from Schoeller Textile in Switzerland, and of course I needed support from this lady here in red, not the lady in red, but in the red garment, to translate all the scientific language that regular scientists have to space language. This is totally different. They all talk in abbreviations, and if you have not a translator, you're totally lost in the jungle of those documents. So, what was the project all about? Astronauts, they have to work out every day for about 2 hours on the ISS to prevent bone degradation and muscle degradation. So our human body is actually very strict. If something is not needed anymore, it's degraded. So message from my side, work out, exercise. If you do not work out and exercise, your muscles degrade and your bones also. So what is it about textiles? Of course, they wear textiles during their exercise. And on Earth, at regular gravity, we have warm air ascending to the top and cold air descending to the bottom, kind of creating a circulation around the human being. Also, the sweat is draining, and this is working actually perfectly. So, a little test right now. Which process, what I mentioned before, of those four very important processes of heat loss is not present in space? Nope. Right. 100 points. As we have weightlessness, zero gravity in space, warm air is no longer lighter, and cold air is no longer heavier. So what happens in space, the warm air that the astronaut is generating is actually forming a bubble, a warm bubble around his body. And the result is that the astronauts overheat much more quickly with the same sports exercise when you compare it to the identical exercise on Earth. And this is why the evaporative heat loss, for example, in space is much more important than, even much more important than the convection and also the conduction. So, and this is what we did. So actually you see the shirt here from the astronaut. By the way, Alexander Gerst is leaving to the space station in about 4 weeks again. And if you want to see really cool pictures, go onto Twitter to AstroAlex and sign in, and you get every day a cool picture and message from him. I really recommend this. And you might also get a notification when he performs the SpaceX project. This is what he did the last time. This is the picture that he posted the last time from the ISS. All right, so the fabrics are already up there. They were launched beginning of April with SpaceX. The Falcon 5 did not explode and returned safely to Earth, so the fabrics are already up there. My subject is going up there in about a few weeks. So we have the same subject as the first time, which is actually also very lucky, but usually you do not have it. This time we get also to measure the body core temperature, which is actually a huge leap forward. In the first project, we only have questionnaires about his subjective vote. Now we get also the data, we get the heart rate, we get the spirogyrometry, and we again have the questionnaire. So we have the full data set of those t-shirts with different evaporative heat loss. By the way, an American company is supporting us here. They have supplied the fabrics, and they made the fabrics with very distinct evaporative heat loss. Yes, this is possible. So we have a 100% version with premium evaporative heat loss, and we have a blended version with regular polyester, with average heat loss, and we have a kind of a baseline with regular polyester that doesn't perform so well. And we hope, of course, to improve the findings that we got from the first project, and this time we also tailored the t-shirts to the astronaut. As mentioned before, the fit also needs to be correct. Actually, those guys, they also lose weight. So when we measured it, when we measured the astronaut about 1 year ago, he was a little bit taller, and we managed to refit the garments later on. The thing that we are looking right now is the next step, going to Mars. Well, NASA is going for Mars, so they already started the project. The first step will be the moon, and then from the moon they will be going to Mars in the 2030s. This is already approved, depending, hopefully, that the guy in the White House, which is currently there, doesn't erase everything. The key point is that if we go to Mars, by the way, on Sunday in Germany, there's a movie, The Martian. Take a look at it. It's actually a great movie. We have a 9-month mission one way. So they go into the spacecraft, go 9 months to Mars, do some experiments there about half a year, and go again 9 months back. So we have a 2-year mission. And everything what they need to take with them. The food, and also the garments. So currently, it's no problem to send every few weeks new garments up to the space station. It's only 400 kilometers above us. And also food, this is no problem. But for this mission, they need to take everything with them. So we are working on special IVA. This is space language, intra-vehicular activity garments. So actually clothes that they wear inside the spacecraft, not on the outside, but inside. Reprocessing is an issue. How do they wash textiles in space? And we know that it's definitely not, it cannot be water, because water is limited to life support. So water will not be used for washing garments. So how to do the laundry in space? Maybe like this? We just don't know. So everybody's working on that right now. Yeah, thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to receive some questions. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright April 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.